game, another point for Reading this week as a second consecutive 0-0 scoreline made it three draws in a row for Jose Gomez's side. Welcome to episode 184 of the Tireless Den. This is Clean Sheet Royals with your host Mark Mayer, and joining me this week on the other end of the phone line is Ollie Allen, weekend preview host and all-round Tireless Den extraordinaire. How's it going, mate?
Very well. That's a very kind introduction from me. Yeah, I was just trying to think of the last time we drew three games in a row. It's been quite a while, I think.
Yeah, and you did, as we'll get onto later in the prediction league, absolutely nail this one in terms of thinking of a 0-0 to pick on. I always think that maybe 0-0 score lines, betting on those, maybe you can cash out really early and make a small, tiny profit, but I'm sure that the bookmakers have thought about that one and made it not possible.
Well, I said on the weekend preview last week, actually, that hardly anyone ever seems to predict a 0-0 draw, so I thought I'd try and be a little bit clever and sort of play on the fact that Reading were probably going to be without Nelson Oliveira, probably weren't going to score any goals, but were equally very solid at the back, and that's how it transpired, I suppose.
Yeah, we'll see later on in the show if Ollie's going to decide to go for a third 0-0 draw for the Blackburn preview. But let's crack on then and discuss what just about as much as we can get out of another 0-0 draw in the Sheffield Wednesday recap.
View from the Tarhurst End. Recapping this week's Championship action.
Right, let's start with the form stats then. One loss in four now for Reading. Three clean sheets in five. One defeat in four away games as well. This is, you know, I must admit, I was away this weekend and wasn't quite able to follow the game, but having seen the full-time result and watched the highlights and seen the stats and everything, from the outset, this just seems like a very okay point. It's kind of like the Villa game, but probably a better result than the Villa result. What do you think on that? Because away from home against a team in form, clean sheet and a point, it's never that bad, is it?
Yeah, I think it's a very decent point. I think especially, Hillsborough's always a very hard place to go to. I think they were obviously Steve Bruce's first home game in charge. I think the atmosphere was very good at Hillsborough. So I think to go then to get a point is a very good result. I think, and especially going away from home as well, I think it's always good to get a clean sheet. I think, you know, we don't keep many clean sheets, but to keep two in a row, I think for the first time, over a year now, I think it's November 2017 was the last time we kept two clean sheets in a row, which is an incredible stat, really. But I think, I think if you look at the teams around us, you know, none of them are really winning. Obviously, Ipswich lost in the Old Farm Derby yesterday. Bolton have lost two in a row. Rotherham have drawn two in a row, but they lost quite a few before that. Millwall aren't really winning any games. It's not a catastrophic result by any means. Obviously, we're still only 1 point behind Rotherham, and it's obviously 1 point still in the relegation zone. So, yeah, it's not a bad result by any means. And it's especially a game, really, I think. So many games under Paul Clement, we would have crumbled in that second half, you know, sort of given in to Sheffield Wednesday's resistance. Because I think they probably were the dominant side, especially in that first half. And under Paul Clement, we saw so many times in the second half that even if we were level at the break, we would just crumble in that second period. And we aren't doing that under Jose Gomez. And it's fantastic to see that he is making us harder to beat. I think we've got to start somewhere. You know, yes, we aren't winning games at the moment. Hopefully that'll come in the next couple of weeks. But he's certainly making us harder to beat. And I think that is a positive to us.
Yeah, and the game against Sheffield Wednesday was different in terms of looking at the stats. I think it's probably the first time under Gomez, although I'm not an expert exactly on the possession stats for every single week, and it's not something I necessarily remember, but I think it's the first time we've lost the possession battle under Gomez since he came in, with a 67% pass success rate, which is, you know, pretty middling to low, if you're being honest. And does that you know, give you hope in a sense? Because for me, that's kind of a good thing, that occasionally you can lose the possession battle. You can play the conditions in a sense, because Gomez spoke after the game about being very windy, it being not a nice sort of easy game to play. Obviously, the conditions and the atmosphere as well were against us. Being a bit more pragmatic in that sense, and the players being able to say, you know what, sometimes we're going to have to get rid and play the long ball game and get it up to whatever strikers we have up there, as a way just to alleviate the pressure. That's not something we've seen from Reading too much in the last few years, and it does kind of give me hope that we are capable of sacrificing that, whether Gomez likes it or not, but the players decided at very least, you know, you've got to sacrifice it to sort of move forward and get those points.
Yeah, it was very tactically clever. I think, you know, whether that was a decision by Gomez or, as you say, it was just sort of the players playing the conditions. But, you know, we saw under Yapstam so many times, who plays, you know, a sort of similar possession style of play, that he was so stubborn a lot of the time, and just refused to sort of change his system, even when things weren't going very well. So it's good to see that Gomez is quite adaptable, you know, not so one dimensional. As Stam, obviously, you know, Stam did change a couple of times with good results and sort of reverted to type the next game. So hopefully we don't see that with Gomez. But yeah, I think it was good to see that he wasn't, you know, sort of stuck in his ways. And I think the subs too, I thought he brought on, obviously, both Bob Varson and Yaku Mate. In the second half, obviously, they didn't do too much in terms of getting Reading a goal, but it certainly showed his intent that, you know, he wasn't, you know, prepared to settle for the draw, and, you know, was going out to try and win the game. So I think, yeah, I think, you know, obviously we didn't win the game, but from Gomez's point of view, I think he would have been happy relatively with what he saw from the team.
Yeah, on the substitutes, I remember Westy last week saying he's seen a couple suspect ones, but I must admit, I've been quietly impressed with Gomez's substitutes as well, because it struck me early on in his reign when we went to Man United, and at half-time, I think it was Ilori got injured, and instead of, you know, 2-0 down away at Man United, a lot of managers would stick on your centre-back or at least a defensive midfielder, and he put on a Luko and shuffled things around then and made it work, and that was something that I was very impressed by. And just to round off the possession sort of thing, the statistic that I pulled out this week is that Reading's back five, the defenders and goalkeeper, had 25% of the overall ball against Aston Villa. They had almost 30% of the overall ball possession against Bolton. This dropped all the way down to 22.5% for the Sheffield Wednesday game. So I think that having the ball less inside your own back five, it means that the opposition can't nick it from you and can't score from that. And the amount of times we've seen Reading concede that way has been, you know, as soon as you can get rid of it, then that solves a lot of the defensive problem. And now we've seen that Gomez, one clean sheet less than Paul Clement's entire reign as Reading manager. That's four playing five. And what do you think it is that Gomez has managed to do with the defence? Because for me, it seems to be, at the moment, we're benefiting from personnel quite a lot. Obviously, the injuries have kind of subsided. We've got more Blackett, Yadom, all fit. Miazga's come in and impressed. Martinez has come in and impressed. He's Tyler Senn's man of the match again for the Sheffield Wednesday game. What is it that you've noticed that the defence has verifiably changed under Gomez?
I'd agree with you in the fact that it is the personnel changes. I think Emiliano Martinez especially has been picked up on by a lot of fans. I wasn't there personally, but a lot of fans saying he had an excellent game. And sort of having seen the highlights, he makes one fantastic close range save to the night Sheffield Wednesday. It's almost a certain goal, and obviously he made a number of good saves against Aston Villa as well, that save from Tammy Abraham's header. So certainly he seems to have added a lot of quality between the six, and I think you can see why, you know, he's probably been lined up as Arsenal's number two next season when Petr Cech retires. But yeah, I think he's certainly added a lot of quality, as you mentioned as well. Matt Miazga has come in and slotted in, you know, quite seamlessly, really. Obviously we've seen quite a lot of change at the back you know, this season. That's perhaps contributed to why we've conceded quite a few goals under Paul Clement. Obviously there was quite a lot of rotation. Liam Moore had a new centre-back partner each week. Obviously Paul McShane has been injured for a lot of the campaign. John O'Shea's come in and played a few games here and there. We've had academy centre-backs playing, and I think Andy Yeardom's played there a few times as well. So it's been very, very rotational at the back, and I think that just having that consistency and having that consistency in the form of a very good centre-back in Matt Miazga, you know, he seems to have formed a very good partnership with Liam Moore. But obviously, I think probably the one downside from the whole I've just got down here, the one downside from, you know, building at the back and sort of being more defensively, it has sort of come at the expense of scoring fewer goals. I think, obviously, we've lacked a little bit of cutting edge. I think we scored 1.3 goals per game under Paul Clement at the start of the season, and that's gone down to 0.625 under Jose Gomez. So under half the amount of goals per game under Jose Gomez. And obviously, you know, it's a brilliant positive that we are keeping them out. But obviously, we, you know, if we are going to start winning games, we are going to need to start scoring goals, and that might be perhaps at the expense of the defence.
Is that perhaps because the defence at the moment, you have players like Martinez, who, I think it, in terms of Martinez and Miazga, it's a bit different for me, because loanees, traditionally in my mind, if you get them from bigger teams like Chelsea and Liverpool, they're going to be like 18 or 19 years old. In reality, we're getting players in their mid-20s. So Miazga's played over 100 games professionally. Martinez, not so much, but he's, you know, experienced and has been around the block a little bit compared to what you usually get. Those players have come in and defensively, arguably, the job is much more simple, you know, keep the ball out. You don't have to be a genius to sort of work out a lot of the things that need to be done. Whereas the way we're playing in attack, it is much more complex and it is much more reliant on link-up play, and that demands that the players have played for each, with each other a bit more spark. And at the end of the day, a lot of the players that have come in, you know, even Ajari and Oliveira, they're playing alongside players like Aluko and McCleary, who, you know, I don't think either of those have even scored or scored. Aluko's got one, I think, this season. So when it comes to the attack, do you think that it is a case of it's just going to take more time because we're not just lumping it into a big man in the box, a bit more simple. We're trying to do something a bit more difficult, and therefore the defence is naturally going to be the thing that works itself out quicker.
I think it's that consistency again. As I said, we've got that consistency now at the back with Moore and Miasca forming quite a good partnership. And yeah, I mean, he seemed to rotate quite a lot. Attacking wise, obviously Oliveira missed out, unfortunately, at the weekend. I think we massively missed him. I think I said on the weekend preview that I was slightly concerned about our attacking options with Oliveira out injured. I mean, it says quite a lot that Gomez decided to go with Sonny Aluko up front, as opposed to John Bedivolvarsson or Yaki Mehta. Obviously, you know,
Danny Loader wasn't even in the squad.
Indeed, yeah. Obviously, Loader's come in. He's obviously not scored, but I don't think he's done too bad. I mean, I'm sure we'll touch upon that a little bit later. But yeah, I mean, obviously, Bodvarsson and Mehta, you know, they're not bad strikers. You know, they've got 13 goals between them this season. Bodvarsson started the season very well, and obviously Mehta had his purple patch sort of October, November time. But, you know, realistically, you know, they are both out of form. That they haven't scored. I don't think either of them have scored since the start of December against Stoke when Bodvarsson scored against them. And, you know, we've said before they don't really fit this system. And unfortunately, you know, that probably is hurting Reading a little bit. But yeah, as you said, I think we need that support from those behind them. I think we aren't going to be scoring many. We're playing the lone striker, so you can only rely so much on whoever's playing that role. Obviously, Oliveira scored in his debut against Bolton, but you know he's not going to be able to score every single week. So I think you've got to be asking more from the players. Aluko's got one, Swift's got two, Barrow's got one, Callum Harriott's got one, but Gareth McCleary's not scored yet. Liam Baker. Lewis Baker. I don't know.
There are a lot of general Baker Championship players, aren't there, to be fair?
I don't know. I think Nathan Baker plays for Bristol City or someone, I'm not sure who Liam Baker is, but yeah, Lewis Baker, sorry. He hasn't scored yet. Obviously, Rinomota plays a bit of a deeper role, but he hasn't scored yet. Ovi Ajari has played a couple of games and hasn't added that much of a threat. So I think I said it last week. I think Westy said it on the podcast last week as well. You need to be asking more from those players, because I think, especially my mind goes back to the playoff season 2 years ago when you had the likes of McCleary, Swift, Roy Bearens all contributing, and Danny Williams scored quite a few goals as well. One of the pros of that season, obviously, along with Kermigan scoring, but before Kermigan sort of hit form, post January, you know, in the first half of the season, you had a lot of players in midfield and out wide sort of contributing, and we aren't getting that this season.
We need to find a way of supplying it, really, because the wingers, in both the Villa and the Sheffield Wednesday game, the wingers only had one shot each. And against Sheffield Wednesday, Aluko only had one shot. Nelson Oliveira only managed three against Villa before having his face mangled by Tyrone Mings. I've just had a quick look, by the way, before we go into Jose Gomez's quotes, which I'll play just in 1 second time. Liam Baker's an Aussie Wolves footballer, which I didn't think was something that you knew particularly loads about. But
that's my passion outside of football, Mark.
Obviously, subconsciously, at the very least, it's your calling. So,
indeed.
come back on Thursday for the weekend preview for the Aussie Bulls, as well as the Reading's game against Sheffield United. And yeah, we'll jump into what Jose Gomez said after the game.
So in the first half, I think Sheffield was better. In the second half, I think we were better. We create more goal situations. And we finished the game stronger than Sheffield. So the good points was this, that we finished stronger than them, and also that we have another clean sheet. It's important to get confidence for the future.
Let's round off recap then with the sort of elephant in the room that we haven't said yet is 2-0, which has you know, fans who wanted entertainment when Stam left and arguably got a little bit of it when Clement was in. We're now, you know, 2-0 isn't necessarily entertaining in much of a sense, although we are in the relegation battle, so you can't always have everything. But what's your take on the fact that we've now had two consecutive stalemates? Do you think it's lucky or unlucky? Is it great defence and poor attack? Like we were just talking about, on another day, do you think there'd be a different score? Because I kind of think that's what it is for me at the moment. On another day, Sheffield Wednesday probably would have won this game. On another day, Villa probably would have been at 1-1 or 2-1, maybe either way. 2-0 comes out, I don't think it's entirely representative of too much.
I don't think they've been too undeserving results. I think we spoke about Martinez, and you know, perhaps if we had someone like Yokola or Sam Walker in goal, you know, they might not have made the saves that Martinez did. But I think on the whole, I think we've played well enough to get those two results. I think, you know, and they are decent results. I think obviously Aston Villa are a very good team, a very high scoring team as well. I think they've scored the third most goals in the Championship this season. So to keep a clean sheet against them was a good result. As I said, obviously Hillsborough's a very, very tough place to go. I think especially with it being Bruce's first game in charge. But to be honest, I think, you know, whilst it would have been good to get the wins, I think ultimately, you know, we haven't lost. You know, we've picked up 2 points from these two games. You know, two tough games, as I said. And I think, you know, if we can build on that now, you know, not regress and lose on Wednesday or the weekend. If we can build on these two results, I think, you know, we might well look back on these 2 points in a few months' time and think that they were key to survival potentially.
Yeah, I agree on that. Actually, I think when it comes to how the history books will look back on these last two results, I don't think that any of the history books will say Reading got relegated because they drew these games 0-0. And if we stay up, as you say, getting some results against Blackburn and from then on, I think they'll look back and say those were very important, stabilising results. And under a new manager, I don't think we can complain too much about those. And we'll go now into a pub chat where we're going to be talking about how the academy players are progressing.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast. Read the blog on thetarlhurstend.com.
Right, let's go through this position by position then, and we'll breeze through the goalkeepers to begin with, because no academy players from the goal between the six have come through in this season. We've got George Legg, who's out on loan at Bournemouth. He's made 3 appearances, only got there recently. Lewis Ward, equally, only got to Forest Green recently, and he's made 1 appearance off the bench and a start. And Luke Southwood at Eastleigh, he's made 7 appearances. And keeping Graham Stack out of between her sticks, incidentally.
He must be about 40 now, Graham Stack, isn't he?
Exactly, yeah. So having someone who's basically half his age come into a very athletic role, such as goalkeeping, it probably isn't a surprise that the youngster's winning out. Well, obviously, our knowledge of these goalkeepers' abilities is a bit limited, I think it's fair to say. Yeah. But what's your sort of take on how the academy players go into these sort of teams, getting a bit of game time? Obviously, we're quite early days for a couple of them. Do you seriously expect any of these players to come back next season and be sort of reserve goalkeepers or hang around the club?
It's difficult. I think, obviously, historically, I think what has worked well for Reading is sort of one or two senior goalkeepers with an academy backup. You know, the likes of Hanneman backed up by Federici, or Federici backed up by McCarthy. I think that's historically worked quite well for us. But look, I think, you know, George Legg turns 23 in April and he's had 11 loan spells away from Reading. I think Lewis Ward's quite similar. He turns 22 next month and has had 10 loan spells away from the club. So, you know, so does it get to a point where you think potentially, you know, the futures of these players is better for them to perhaps be at a club permanently? I think, you know, we've not, obviously I haven't seen too much of them out on loan, but you know, the fact that they are reaching, you know, sort of 22, 23 now, and they haven't broken into this Reading side. Obviously, we've signed a lot of goalkeepers over the last couple of years. Obviously, Sam Walker came in last summer. Martinez has come in this month as well. So, you know, the managers clearly don't see these players who aren't teenagers. They aren't young guys anymore. You know, they're in their early 20s and still not getting into the team. And I think you've got the likes of Liam Driscoll, Adam Desbois, Jochel Anderson, Connor Boyce Clark. I think he's only 15. I think
one linked with Man United.
Yeah, I think he's playing sort of under-18s football when he's still only 15. Yeah, I think Sky Sports and the United were looking at him. But yeah, I think in terms of goalkeepers, I think for me, you've got to be looking at more that generation of players to potentially come in. Obviously, Luke Southwood's a little bit younger, obviously part of the England side that won the World Cup, the under-20s. So I think out of Legg, Ward and Southwood, my bet would probably be Luke Southwood to come in. But I think, you know, if it gets to sort of this time next year and George Legg or Lewis Ward still haven't broken into Reading's team, or, you know, or at least not getting on the bench, I think it's probably better for their careers to potentially move on.
I'm inclined to agree with you. I don't agree with your point that getting into your early 20s isn't young.
Well, no, true.
that would be a bit of a sour point to realise personally in my 25-year-old self. But yeah, I think that I agree that you're right on Legg and Ward. I think at some point when you get to these stages, and Alex McCarthy obviously went on to, is a first-class Premier League goalkeeper, but his loan spells were at League One teams. He was the first choice for a number of seasons at the likes of Brentford and Yeovil.
Yeah.
It's not what Legan
Ward achieved. Even at Leeds, I think, in the Championship as well. I think he was
exactly,
he was
and Ipswich as well, I think. So yeah, that's a sign that teams are willing to bet on these players and have a good go with them. And Southwood, I think, is, as you say, getting some decent-ish game time. We'll see what Ward and Legg do. If Reading decide they're good enough to be the third-choice goalkeeper or second-choice goalkeeper next season, that's great. But as even though Manoni's just gone to Minnesota on loan, for anyone who missed that news, looks like his Reading career is pretty much over. Martinez doesn't look like we'll keep him next season. So that still gives us Yarkola, who's out of contract, I believe, and Sam Walker. Still gives us a reasonable foundation for going into a summer, and we'll see what comes out with that. The defence, then, there's a number of centre-backs that have had a bit of game time. Tom Holmes, who made his debut last season, Gabriel Osho, who's just gone to Bristol Rovers, and Tom McIntyre, both Osho and McIntyre, have started a game. And then we've also got the full-backs, Omar Richards, who's made 9 appearances this season, 2 off the bench for the first team, and Tenai Watson, who's 24 appearances into a season at AFC Wimbledon. I think it's interesting with the defence, isn't it? Because relying on academy defenders, we've kind of done it before when Alex Pearce came in, gave him the armbands, and it didn't quite work out when he first came in. Michael Hector probably, again, relied on like 11 loan spells, I think it was. What's your sense on the defence? Because for me, I think Omar Richards has a real decent chance of shadowing someone for the next couple of years before we really have to decide if we're going to, you know, back him as a left back, depending on, you know, Jordan Ibiza and Tyler Blackett's future and injury status. Watson, it's difficult to tell. A lot of players at right back, you'd imagine, can survive in a team like Wimbledon who don't have much money and who aren't doing particularly well in the league. So I'm not too sure that I would gamble and say that I definitely have Watson back next season as my reserve.
I think he's got quite mixed reviews from Wimbledon fans. I think there was a clip that on social media a few weeks ago, he sort of gave away a goal against Sunderland that didn't go down too well. But I think, you know, see, I think Chris Gunter's probably likely to move on in the summer. Obviously, he's not played much this season, wasn't in the squad at the weekend. So I think there's potential for him to move on in the summer. So that does potentially free up a backup spot to Andy Yeardom. And whether Tenai Watson takes that, I think, obviously, I think it was definitely worthwhile him getting that loan spell out at Wimbledon this season. I think he needed that. I think, to be honest, I think Omar Richards probably needs that time away as well. I think if Jordan Ibiza was fit, obviously not being fit for 18 months or so now, but I think if Ibiza was playing, I think we would have seen Richards go out on loan. I think he broke into the side last season and did relatively well. I mean, I think he even scored two goals. So, but I think this season I'm not too won over by him, to be honest. I think he doesn't offer an awful lot of cover defensively. I think he's quite willing to get forward, but for me, I think he needs that experience away, you know, sort of in League One. I think that would do him good, because at the moment, I think we're fine to rely on Tyler Blackett. And obviously, you know, it's difficult with the beat because obviously he's been out for so long, and you know whether he'll be the same player that he was after he's had all of this time out and after he's had these operations. You know, it's sort of 50-50. So I think it's great to see academy players and to decide. And I think Richards does have a future at Reading, but I think for me, I would probably send him out on loan potentially next season.
Yeah, for me, Richards, it's just the case that he's obviously been bred in the academy way these days, that is the passing game, and that, I think, plays into his hands a lot when it comes to, you know, Jose Gomez being able to pick up on him, bring him off the bench and do little bits like he has been able to do under Gomez. So I think that'll very much stand him in his favour. And speaking of which, into the midfield, the only two real academy players that have, you know, made their debut basically in the last few seasons of the current first team squad, Josh Barrett, who came up, God, 3-4 years ago now, was under Brian McDermott, and that's in his second spell. I remember he started a game. And Andy Rinomoto, and, you know, we've sung our praises for Rinomoto on this podcast a lot, and he's bred in that academy way of being able to move the ball, but he's also got that intelligence, that sort of physicality that we want. And it's interesting how you can contrast Rinomoto and Barrett, as Barrett was the sort of chosen son, as it were, who like captained the academy teams when he was a bit younger, and there was a lot of success around the academy teams. He's doing okay for the under-23 team this season, but he hasn't, you know, he's gone out on loan and not done much. hasn't been called up into the first team this year, whereas Rinomoto, who came from a lower league team, or a non-league team, should I say, when we first grabbed him, and has come into the side without, I don't think he's been out on loan, and therefore and done quite well. So it's interesting to sort of contrast how their careers have gone.
I mean, it's worth pointing out, actually, that Rinomoto is actually older than Josh Barrett. I think Barrett's only 20, which, you know, it seems like he has been around forever. You say it was 3 years ago now, and that he made his debut when he was only 17. But yeah, he's only 20 years old, so there's still plenty of time for him to break into a team. But yeah, I think, you know, I can't speak highly enough of Andy Rinomoto. He's been fantastic since coming in, and a real shining light for the academy, really, and a huge sort of role model potentially for the younger players to, you know, sort of seek that same success. I think hopefully, obviously, you know, it's only been a couple of months, and you know, we saw what a big impact Liam Kelly had a few years ago when he broke into the team and has sort of faded since. So hopefully Rinomoto does sort of continue that. I mean, although I suggest that he doesn't continue it too much, otherwise he might get snapped up by a bigger team. But yeah, no, he's been fantastic so far this season. As I say, there's still plenty of time for someone like Josh Barrett. Obviously, I think someone like Ryan East as well, obviously included in the squad against Man United, was a big thing for him. So he might be potentially someone else from that midfield to come into the side.
Yeah, 20 appearances Rinomoto's made this season so far. And it's also, I think, one of the things that I don't think we've ever mentioned on the show is the academy scouting system that Reading have, and the way that we can also have the power, in essence, to be able to go and find these players. Rinomoto being from Leeds and going into non-league football and being able to pick out the ones that we want from that and having the influence to go and get them is a big plus for the club, and fair play to whoever noticed Andy Rinomoto and brought him into the team. And the attack will finish on them. Ben House and Sam Smith are both out on loan. Ben House made a couple of appearances off the bench for Swindon. Sam Smith for Shrewsbury, neither have scored yet. Danny Loder's played. He started 6 games and come off the bench in 7 for Reading this season. He's still 18, of course. And Andrija Novakovic, who has played 19 times for Fortuna Sittard in Holland, scoring 7, and most recently on the weekends. I think it's very interesting when it comes to 4 strikers in the academy, because obviously strikers are, you know, traditionally the most sought after, the most lauded players in the game. But when it is a player like Danny Loder or Novakovic coming through, it seems like there's a lot more hype, there's a lot more hope and expectation for strikers coming through. And I don't know what to make of it. I think Loder, we'll talk about Loder to begin with, but for me, Loder's done as much as anyone could realistically have asked for him to do this season. Yes, occasionally you get Wayne Rooney's coming through who score goals as soon as they hit the senior pitch, but what we've seen of Loder so far, and perhaps taking him out of the squad for a few weeks to continue his work, I'm satisfied with it.
Yeah, I think I'd agree with you. I think it's a good point about how the strikers grab the headlines. Obviously, you know, it's the simple fact is that goals, you know, get people's attention, and these players are players who have scored a lot of goals at academy level or in Novakovic's case out on loan. I think that will naturally get people's attention more than, say, if a defender makes a tackle. I think that's, you know, not just in young players, but just in general. That's why, you know, strikers win all the awards, and why strikers are or attackers are named, you know, the best player of the year or the best player in the world. I think that's just natural. So, you know, there's definitely more hype around the likes of Loder and Novakovic. But yeah, I think, you know, Loder's only 18. I think, as you say, very, very few players cement starting spots at 18, I think, especially up front. You know, he's come into a team that's low on confidence, you know, that's not scoring that many goals anyway, that doesn't create too many chances. And I think, yes, he hasn't scored, which is perhaps disappointing, but just like Barrett, he's still got plenty of time to develop. And I think, you know, potentially, again, someone like Omar Richards, Loder could do with a spell away. But I think he definitely deserved his chance. I think you have to, you know, look at his goal scoring record with the under-23s and with the England youth teams. And, you know, you can't say that he didn't deserve his chance. I think you could even argue he might have deserved his chance long before he actually got it. So I think, obviously, perhaps we've seen the last of him for this season, perhaps, but there's still a very, very big future, I think, for Danny Loder.
Absolutely, and I think when it comes to that history books that I mentioned earlier with these 2-0, the history books, if Reading get relegated, will not say that Reading got relegated because they played Danny Loder too much. It's just not how it's going to be. So with that, I think we can bank what he's learned so far, and hopefully he'll continue to develop. Novakovic, the last player we'll discuss before we move on to the mailbag. 7 goals in the Dutch top flight, which is not a bad league to be scoring goals in. He's obviously made his debut for the USA men's national team. He's won, and there's a question in the mailbag, he's won every so often, especially when he scores. He scored on the weekend, and he hadn't scored in the league for ages, and he had a bit of an injury for most of November. He was pretty much out for. So whenever he scores, we always get a question in the mailbag about him. Do you think that the level that he's playing at, you know, you don't have to be an expert on the Dutch top flight to know that it's a decent, arguably better than championship level for a lot of the teams that play there. Certainly the top teams are better than championship level.
Roy Burns is playing there now, for example.
Exactly, and he brought us to the playoffs, so he must be brilliant. Do you think that it's the sort of level that we can assume he's good enough to therefore at least deserve, you know, pre-season training of, you know, next June, at least deserves a crack to be in amongst the mix of players who are trying to impress Jose Gomez?
Yeah, I think it's a decent enough level. Obviously, he did very well in the second tier last season, and obviously, made that step up, which I think was probably the big question this summer, whether he could make that step up. But yeah, I think, you know, I think that goal at the weekend was his first goal in 11 games. So it's potentially a little bit, you know, sort of, you know, whenever we, I think that there's always clips as well of his goals on social media, and that's always going to generate a bit of hype around him. But I think, yeah, you know, there aren't too many strikers at the club at the moment. You know, obviously Oliveira might be here next season, but might not. Yaki Mate, I get the sense that he's probably off in the summer. And obviously John Dalibor Vast as well. So, you know, there's certainly opportunity for him. You know, whether Jose Gomez knows too much of him or whether he's seen an awful lot of him out in Holland is a different matter. But I think, you know, especially getting his call up to the US national side and, you know, scoring goals gets your attention. So I think, yeah, there's definitely a chance for him in the summer.
Yeah, and ultimately when it does come to the summer, what the team need to do if they decide that, you know, they don't want him, it does seem like he's going to be one of those players that will be able to be moved on with a bit of transfer fee and some good wishes, which the club have done plenty of times over the last, you know, couple of years and decades even, when it comes to these sort of academy players, just to sort of not have to deal with it in a sense, don't have to go through the rigmarole of bringing them into the team and having to integrate them. If, you know, an American team or whatever wants puts in a decent bid, I think they'll probably take it. So we'll go on to the mailbag then, and as I say, there's a few academy questions in that as well.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at the Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/thetarlhurstend.
Tommy sends us the first question, saying, is there an unfair bias towards homegrown players, and is there a threat to install them into the first team too early, potentially damaging their future potential, e.g. Danny Loader? We'll get that on second, just get the other academy questions in. Tom Harrow-Smith, writer for the website, says, Novakovic's name raised again this weekend after another goal. Realistically, do you ever see him playing for the club? I've got this dreadful feeling his long-term future isn't with us, and another Axel Andreasen scenario is on the cards again. Of course, Axel Andreasen being a relatively promising centre-back who went to Norwegian second tier, I think, for the start of the season. He's now made that move permanent, so he's going to be playing for Viking from now on. And Reading FC Bible say Ryan East will be the next player to make the debut, in my opinion. Let's quickly touch, because we've discussed Novakovic, so let's quickly touch on that that sort of sense of unfair bias towards homegrown players.
Yep.
I think that there probably is, generally speaking, because, you know, fans like players who come through the academy. It's just one of the things that, obviously, they like big name players coming in and scoring loads of goals, but a big name player coming in and not scoring loads of goals is their least favourite thing. At least if academy players come in and don't score loads of goals, then, you know, it's fair enough. They're young, move them on, try again. Do you think that when he says e.g. Loader, do you think there is a potential damaging to the future potential that has either taken place or could have taken place this season? Because I must say that I don't worry about that too much myself.
Not for me. I think, you know, as I said, I think he definitely deserved his chance. I think he will have learned a lot from this. I don't think, you know, you can say that Danny Loader not scoring in, you know, 9 or 10 games that he played is going to damage his, you know, future potential. I don't think. Obviously, he's still only 18. You know, but as I say, I think a loan spell away would do him good. But, you know, I think you have to give these players opportunities, you know, especially if they deserve it, as Loader did. I mean, it is, you know, it brings that feel-good factor, I think, to the side. I think Reading needed a lift sort of back in October, November time. And I think Loder definitely gave the fan base that. It's always nice to see one of our own, you know, I suppose, playing out on the pitch. And I think, you know, I've always been of the view that, you know, that these players do have to be good enough. I think I wrote a piece a few years ago for the Times Den when the likes of Tarek Fosu, Craig Tanner and Jack Stacey all left without really being given too much of a chance by Reading. And I think it is nice to see these players out on the pitch because they are academy players, but at the end of the day, they do need to be good enough. And I think Loder was good enough. I think especially with the sides struggling as it was and still is, I think, you know, these players, you know, their development, you know, might come in League One, it might come in League Two. But I think if there is the opportunity to play them higher up, you know, even if it is for just one or two games, we've seen Osho play one or two games this season, we've seen McIntyre play one or two games this season. I think even if it's not a regular place, that experience will do wonders for them. I think, you know, these are players who have been at Reading for, you know, 7 or 8 years. They've been at the club since they've been eight or 9 years old. So to finally make that debut, I think we saw in the club did a fantastic piece with Osho and McIntyre this week to celebrate. I think it's the Made in the EFL series. They did a fantastic interview with both Osho and McIntyre with their mums, which was very heartwarming to watch. But you could see how much it meant, I think, especially for McIntyre, obviously being a fan, you could see how much it meant for these players. And I think that experience of playing in the first team will be invaluable for them.
Yeah, I do tend to agree when it comes to the sense that if you don't put these players in, then you can do more damage, you know, by ignoring them and them getting upset and wanting to move on. And it seems like Jack Stacey's certainly one that Reading might be regretting letting go. He's doing very well at Luton. Craig Tanner, incidentally, I just had a check then, as you mentioned his name, not thought about him for a while. He's currently on a long-term injury spell at Motherwell, so not doing as well as he probably would have hoped to have been doing, but, you know, injury is injury. It is difficult. You've got to trust the professionals who work with these lads day in, day out, and they are young lads. And we've seen, like, with Aaron Cool is one player that came in, didn't do particularly well, and I don't think he's got a club at the moment. So these things happen, I think.
He had a very nasty injury, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And these things happen, and it's very difficult to know until you do it. So as long as the club is willing to give these players the chance to actually get on the pitch, and who knows, maybe you'll get Harry Kane, maybe you'll get a Freddie Adu or something like that. Yeah.
I think that's the thing. I think, you know, at the end of the day, we haven't seen these players. Well, our judgment of these players, of these academy players, is built on clips we see on social media, things that certain people have said. We don't really know too much about them. So I think you have to place the judgment really in the coaches who see them day in and day out. I think they're best placed rather than fans who are sort of basing their assumptions on small clips.
Yeah, Dave McCormack also said, what's the thoughts on Novakovic and why is he still in Holland? As we touched on that earlier, I think it really is going to be about pre-season and who's in charge and what league we're in for Novakovic's future. And the fact that he's getting game time at the end of the day, we got a lot of strikers. I still think it's the case that he's in the right place, hopefully at the right time as well. Simeon Pickup, Tyler St. Edison says, who are our best two wingers? McCleary and Barrow were underwhelming on Saturday against Sheffield Wednesday. And this comes back to the point on the attack we were discussing earlier. Just for me at the moment, the attacking link-up play, it's a difficult thing to get right. And we've in Mo Bower, you've got someone who relies on his pace. Gareth McCleary, you've got someone who is technically pretty decent. Again, kind of relies on his pace, but has had a lot of injuries. In terms of our wingers, I would say, moving the conversation on a little bit, that's perhaps the area that in the summer, if we stay up, that's probably one of the first areas that I target for improvement.
Yeah, I probably agree. I mean, it's funny how things work out, really. I think probably this time last year, we were before Roy Bearance left, we were probably saying we had too many wingers. And now we're saying that we haven't really got any of them who are quite good enough. I'd probably agree. I think for me, Mo Bower is probably the most naturally gifted winger at the club. He's willing to take players on. He's very quick, he's very skillful. So it's not quite worked out for him this season, but I think, you know, you only have to look at how the likes of Nottingham Forest and Hull, who are both higher up the Reading in the Championship, were reportedly wanted to sign him on deadline. I think that shows you that he has got a lot of ability. In terms of the other one, I'd probably go for Ovie Ejaria. Obviously, perhaps not a natural winger, but I think he's looked bright whenever he's played. I think Gomez has tended to play him more out wide than down the middle. I think he's done a good job there. Obviously, got the assist for Aluko at Derby. But yeah, I think, as I mentioned earlier, the contribution really hasn't been good enough from the wingers so far this season. So I think that would definitely be one area in the summer to look at.
And Ajaria wasn't in the squad for the Sheffield Wednesday game. Was there an official reason for that?
I think he was ill. I think he'd been suffering with illness. I think it was the same with McCleary. I think McCleary played, obviously, but I think from what Tom said on the weekend preview last week, Ajaria had been suffering a little bit with illness during the week, and Gomez didn't want to risk him for that. But he should be back probably for midweek or the weekend.
Yeah, he's certainly, when we discuss our lineups for the Blackburn game, he's certainly someone that I'll be putting in my lineup. And Barrow on the other flank. Sometimes you just need that pace, you need that breakout, and you know, Jose Gomez, at the end of the day, he needs to coach these players. If they haven't got an end product, that's something you need to teach them. And you can't teach pace, but you can teach crossing a ball, for example, or hopefully you can. I don't know exactly how easy that is, but hopefully that's something that the coaches can work on. And Stephen Hyde with another question in for the mailbag, saying, seemingly the only correct thing that Paul Clement eventually learned about his squad was that Swift cannot take non-shooting set pieces. How long will we have to wait before Gomez learns this? And now that Bakuna is gone, who should be taking them? And this one, I think Reading have a decent stock. Obviously, Jordan Obita would be my first one to go to, were he not injured. But we've got a decent-ish stock of players. I think Aluko is someone who can put a free kick in. Whether it's stunning or not is another matter.
Outside corners, Sonny Aluko. The amount of times I've seen Sonny Aluko take a corner and it's hit the first man, it's incredible.
But... No, this is true. But corners and non-shooting set pieces, luckily there isn't always the first man issue sort of thing. Yep. If you're deep enough and you can float it in. But yeah, I agree on the corners, actually. McCleary's someone I've seen take a few corners and whatnot over the years and never been particularly impressed, I must admit. Liam Kelly is probably the most naturally gifted set-piece taker in the squad, even more so than Swift, I'd argue. But he's just not in the team at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, we'll move on to it when we look at the Blackburn game. I'd potentially bring Kelly back in. But, I mean, apart from him, I think, you know, it's probably worth trying someone like Lewis Baker or Andy Rinomota. I think, obviously, you know, we haven't seen too much of what they can do at set pieces. But, you know, if you are going to give someone other than Swift or McCleary or Luke Kelly, I think those players have shown, you know, that they can play good long balls or they can play nice passes. So, you know, if you want suggestions, I'd probably look at Rinomota or Baker potentially.
Yeah, I think Baker's a decent enough shout. At the end of the day, set pieces are a particular skill that not every player can deliver. I can't remember Paul Scholes taking many curled free kicks into the top corner, even though he was technically brilliant. But,
yeah.
You know, at the end of the day, it's something that the routine is arguably as important as the delivery, so long as the delivery isn't terrible. And quite often we see some terrible deliveries. So, yeah, I think it probably will be Swift for the foreseeable future. I don't think Gomez is going to change that too much. And Andy Johnson with the last question then, saying, has the relationship between fans and BBC Radio Berkshire ever been as bad as it is now? Constant debate about their negativity. Now, Ollie, do you want to touch this one with a 10-foot bar as well? Because it's an interesting when it comes to... I don't particularly consider ourselves members of the media, but in terms of media on media commentary, we do tend to err on the side of caution in Tyler in terms of, you know, it being a difficult job and whatnot. Although the BBC Berkshire guys have been there for a long time, Della Gooding and A.D. Williams being the sort of star trio, as it were, when it comes to their coverage. And I think this has mainly came up, was after the Derby game, mainly this came up, A.D. Williams on Twitter, yeah. Particularly clashing.
I think it was
fans.
When Gomez first came in, really. They weren't too keen on him, but...
Yeah, and perhaps they preferred someone like Phil Parkinson. I do get the sense that with Tim Dale in particular, it enjoys his football to be played fast and furious, and there's nothing wrong with that. But what Reading are playing at the moment isn't that, and perhaps when you're commentating and you're sort of analysing a game and what BBC Berkshire have to do, obviously, if you've got to think about it, they've got to fill 10 minutes between half-time, they've got to fill an hour or 45 minutes of discussion before the game, and yeah. They've got to fill an hour or so or 30 minutes of discussion after a game, which isn't particularly easy, you know. It's much easier to run a website and do 300 word articles and do a podcast once a week, which they don't, you know, they've got to produce a lot more coverage. And therefore, I think someone like A.D. Williams likes to play devil's advocate when it comes to this debate about negativity. And perhaps he's not the most subtle of people in terms of being able to do that, as well as some fans would like. But I don't know, what's your take on the idea of negativity? Do you think that it's sort of because Gomez's style? Do you think it's ultimately because of the results? What or entertainment? What, where do you think that these sort of things come out of?
I think at the end of the day, their job is to cause debate. I think they're a bit like Piers Morgan in that sense. I mean, I don't want to compare them to Piers Morgan, but you know, their job is to get people to listen in, to phone into the show, to tweet them with opinions, and to do that, they have to be a bit out there. I think, you know, whether you like it or not, I mean, it clearly works. I mean, I think credit to him. I think Eddie Williams is very, very open. Sort of takes on most supporters' questions. You know, he's never once said that you have to agree with their opinion. I think obviously most people disagree with the opinion, but in terms of the anti-Gomez thing, I think it was more just the fact that he was a name that they didn't know. I think when someone like Phil Parkinson is tipped for the job and is mentioned by some members of the media for the job, I think, you know, they obviously have that relationship in place with Parkinson. Obviously, Eddie Williams played with Phil Parkinson. Mick Gooding, I'm not sure if he did or not, but you know, they also wanted someone else. But I think, you know, it has improved. I think you can't say that they're as negative as they were when he first came in, and they've certainly improved in recent weeks. I think, you know, potentially they've been won over by Jose Gomez's charm, as we all have. So I think, you know, at the end of the day, they're there to cause debate, and it is clearly working at the moment. I think, you know, their negativity, whether that turns people away, it might do, but I think for me it actually drives people in more to listen, which at the end of the day is their job, I suppose.
Yeah, and my final thoughts on BBC Berkshire is it depends what you want really from a coverage. I think Reading has pretty varied coverage at the moment, without trying to pat ourselves on the back too much. You have your podcast, your websites, your Twitter, more than you've ever had before, so it gets compared to certain ways of approaching it. And if you're going, I think obviously the guys at the moment were, you know, footballers in the 90s and noughties, and Tim Deller's been, you know, watching Reading for decades. They're very much, it always felt to me like they're very much of the old guard, in not sense that they've been moved on in football, but they're not so keen on the sort of passing football and you know, people like Jose Gomez coming out of the woodwork and taking charge of prestigious big clubs like Reading. I think they perhaps prefer it of the old school sort of Copple football, McDermott football, Parkinson football to an extent. And there's nothing wrong with that, but the question...
Well, that's what's got Reading success in the past. We've gone up with Copple and McDermott. So I think, you know, you can't blame them for wanting that sort of football.
No, and I think if you think you're the type of person who wants them to sort of move on, the question is, who do you replace that sort of media coverage with? Do you replace it with someone who's very new age and, you know, like a sort of YouTube sensation type of people who come in and have a completely different idea of how to do coverage and do, you know, all sorts of madcap things? Do you replace it with fans? Because I'm going to tell you, there's absolutely zero chance in hell that a BBC radio station is going to give fans its radio coverage, and I wouldn't expect them to. Is it going to be run by people who are, you know, slightly a bit younger than they are, but, you know, not too nice? There's no sort of silver bullet in terms of media coverage that makes everyone happy. And
they've got a very clear demographic, I think.
Exactly. And BBC Berkshire know their audience. I think they know the sort of fans that they're trying to relate to. They create debate. They always let, as you say, I think they always let people come in and have their opinion, and they discuss it, and then they move on to the next game. And, you know, ultimately, if you've got a radio, they do also provide it for free, although TV license exempt, that is. So yeah, it's one of those things, if you don't like it at the end of the day, as with this podcast, you can always turn it off. So on that note, should we move on then and talk about the Blackburn game on Wednesday night?
The Tarlhurst End Podcast. By Reading fans, for Reading fans.
So 8 p.m. Wednesday night at the Mad Stad. BBC Berkshire will be there, Tarlhurst End will be there, all the major news outlets in Reading will be there. And Blackburn are a very interesting team. I think that this is the exact type of team we want to be playing at the moment. Not too low that they're going to come and park the bus. Not too high that they're actually going to threaten us, or that I'm worried about the sort of players they have. They're very mid-table. Last seven games, drawn, one, lost, one, one, lost, lost. So, you know, a bit of everything they have. Late defeat against Bristol City on the weekend. Good time. Good team to have up next, I think.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think a few weeks ago, I might have been a bit fearful of facing them. But as you say, lost 5-2 to Brentford the weekend before last, and then obviously to Bristol City at the weekend. So, you know, so not in too good a form. But I think, you know, I think they've still got slim-ish chance, I think, of the playoffs. I think a few weeks ago that might be more likely, but I think it's faded a bit now. But you know, they've still got 15 odd games to play, so I think you know they won't have written off this season just yet. So I think you know I think especially with Reading being in the position that they are, I think they will see this game as sort of a must win game. I think, to be honest, I think they'll think that they can come here and get something with the position that Reading are in and try and reignite their playoff charge potentially.
Yeah, in that sense, again, I don't believe that they'll come here and park the bus for a 0-0. And their games have been quite high scoring. You mentioned that Brentford game. They're the 12th highest scorers in the league, but also the 4th leakiest defence, which is a pretty high average for both of those assets to be quite high up in the tables for those two things. So do you think that they will ultimately come with quite high press, moving the ball forward quickly? They've only won once away since October the 6th, but ultimately I think this stands to be a potentially quite entertaining game as well.
It might be a third 0-0 draw in a row, potentially, but no.
You can't rule it out, can you?
You can't rule it out, no, but I think they've conceded the most goals away from home this season, I think, along with possibly Ipswich, but I think... Yeah, they are there to be got at, but at the same time, you know, they've got some very good attacking players. You know, Bradley Dack, I think, scored 14 goals this season. Danny Graham's a very experienced striker at this level. Adam Armstrong, I think, is hitting form in the last couple of weeks. You know, so they have got players who can hurt you. But I think, yeah, with Reading being, you know, as defensively as stout as they have been in recent weeks, I think hopefully, you know, it shouldn't be too bad. But I think, yeah, it won't be an easy game for Reading by any means. But I think especially with us being at home, I think this is sort of what, you know, the last two 0-0 draws have sort of been potentially building towards, and I think a lot of people pinpointing this one as potentially one that we have to win as well. So,
yeah, what would you do with the lineup with Sonny Aluko starting as a striker at Hillsborough? If Nelson Oliveira's fit, I think we all agree it's a no-brainer that he starts as the striker. And then for that kind of, with Rinomota as the centre mid, and you'd imagine that Swift is going to play, you've got Baker and McCleary and Barrow holding out against Mate, Harrier, Oliveira, as I mentioned, Liam Kelly, Bodvarsson, Ajario if he's fit, Danny Loader. The competition is incredibly high.
Yeah, there's a lot of people for Gomez to choose from. I think he might look to switch up. Obviously, the last two games being 0-0s, he might try and potentially bring in some players to try and get Reading on the score sheet. But yeah, I'd agree. I'd definitely bring Oliveira back in. I think, As I briefly mentioned earlier, I think I'd probably give Liam Kelly a chance. I think, you know, I think he's played at all under Gomez apart from a brief cameo against Man United. So I think with the midfield being as it is, I think Lewis Baker's not particularly impressed me so far. I think he's a decent enough option in there, but he's not done too much for me so far. So I'd probably bring in Liam Kelly for Lewis Baker. But other than that, I think Callum Harriott's done all right. I would also bring in Ajari if he's recovered from illness. But other than that, yeah, I'd keep it relatively the same, because that's what's keeping Reading quite solid at the moment.
If Ajari is fit, I think he plays for McCleary. And if Oliveira is fit, I think he comes in for Luko. I'd probably just about keep a Luko as the man off the striker. And therefore Baker would be the man dropping out for me in that position. But I'd understand if Gomez sticks with Baker, because he's obviously new to the team, he's obviously got a bit of talent, obviously seeing something he likes in that, plays the style. So if we stick with Baker, I won't be too concerned. Predictions then, as we round off the show, to recap on the Sheffield Wednesday game, Wim and Handbags both went draws, as did Westy. However, yourself, as we mentioned, 0-0 draw puts you to the top of the league with 26 points, Wim on 25, Handbags 24. So I'll give you the honours then of announcing Reading's 3-0 win for the Wednesday night game, and that being an absolute shoo-in.
Well, I thought that a few weeks ago that Dan was far and away at the top of the leaderboard, so I'm quite proud to have managed to have caught him up. But yeah, I think I'm not going to go 0-0 this time. I think, as I say, Blackburn tend to concede quite a few goals away from home, but I think they will provide Reading with quite a tough challenge, so I'm going to go for a 1-1 draw.
Yeah, well, I'm still optimistic that we'll get a win. I was going to go 2-1, but then I thought, can I seriously see us scoring two goals? And I thought not. So I'm going to remain optimistic and say 1-0 win to Reading, on the basis that I can really imagine this game being an early goal or something, maybe 5th minute, and then going on to have Blackburn absolutely siege us for the last 20 minutes and getting over the line and it being a big moment in the season. That's my optimistic sense, and scraping wins over Blackburn as your optimistic sense is a bit of a perspective as to how far we've come. But
three clean sheets in a row would be unprecedented as well. I think I can't remember the last time we got three clean sheets in a row. It would be quite remarkable.
I thought about that as I made the prediction, but to be honest, I can see it happening. I do think that it's not beyond the realms of possibility at all, and it's nice to have some confidence in our defence for the first time in God knows how long. We've had that. So that rounds up episode 184 of the Tarleton podcast. Ollie, when can we expect you back on the old weekend preview?
Should be in podcast feed, I think, probably Friday morning. I'm actually speaking to the Sheffield United fan actually straight after this actually for that section of the show. But yeah, so after the Blackburn game, a brief discussion on that and how that one's gone. But largely, yeah, looking forward to Sheffield United at the weekend, which will be a very, very tough game, obviously, with them being right in contention for promotion this season. But yeah, in the podcast feeds on Friday morning, I think.
Beautiful. Well, thanks for coming on this afternoon, and the Tarleton podcast will itself be back probably Sunday night. I'm going to try and get Sunday, maybe Sunday daytime, sort of as the best time to review the Blackburn and Sheffield United games. And that brings us to a close for this episode. Wednesday, 8 o'clock kickoff at the Mad Stad. As we say then this week, it is the opportunity for the third clean sheet in a row, and also the opportunity for three valuable points, which could well take us out of the relegation zone for the first time in, well, let's face it, no one knows the stats because it's been absolutely bloody ages since we've been outside the relegation zone. So let's hope we get that against Blackburn on Wednesday night. Come on, you arse. You smile, funny how the crumbs always leave a trail, even when it's